my pleasure to welcome you here to Emmanuel this morning. And my name is Kieran. I know some of you are visiting today, and it's great to have you with us. I know Ruth has brought some fellow Indian people, so you're very welcome. Oh, parents, good. You're very welcome this morning. It's great to have you here. We look forward to chatting to you later. So good to have you. And I know there are others of you who are with us today, perhaps for the first time, and it's our pleasure to have you among us. We are looking at the book of Colossians, thinking about what it means to know Jesus. You'll find that on page 833, so if you'd like to turn to there. We're going to think through this theme of continuing in the faith, and we will look at verses 21 to 23 to do that. But I'll read from verse 15 to give us a little bit of the immediate context that this section is in. So we'll begin reading at verse 15 of Colossians 1, page 833. This is talking about Jesus when it says, "He is the image of the invisible God, the firstborn over all creation. For by him all things were created, things in heaven and on earth, visible and invisible, whether thrones or powers or rulers or authorities. All things were created by him and for him. He is before all things, and in him all things hold together. And he is the head of the body, the church. He is the beginning and the firstborn from among the dead, so that in everything he might have the supremacy. For God was pleased to have all his fullness dwell in him, and through him to reconcile to himself all things, whether things on earth or things in heaven, by making peace through his blood shed on the cross. Once you were alienated from God and were enemies in your minds because of your evil behavior. But now he has reconciled you by Christ's physical body through death to present you holy in his sight, without blemish and free from accusation. If you continue in your faith, established and firm, not moved from the hope held out in the gospel, this is the gospel that you heard and that has been proclaimed to every creature under heaven, and of which I, Paul, have become a servant." And this is the word of the Lord. Yes, there's something for you. Well, it's been quite the week, I think, politically speaking, wouldn't you say, with the election in America. I'm used to Americans shaking their head already. Yes, it's been quite the week with the election of Donald Trump in the States. And if you look at any political movement, and you've seen it with what's happened with this election, is during the campaigns, they say, look at the past. Look at how terrible everything has been under this previous government. Look at the mess Obama and the Democrats have made of the country. And that's outlined. And then what's happened is the rhetoric turns to, now look where we are. Look at what we have in the present. Now that Donald Trump and the Republicans have been elected, now everything is in a better place. Now everything is good. I'm not saying this is my opinion. I'm saying this is how things are being presented. And then what will happen is that when everybody was celebrating from the Trump campaign, they're now saying, now into the future, we are going to continue to bring about change, and we are going to continue until we make America great again. So you have a comparison with what's happened in the past. You have a celebration with where they are in the present. And then you have an anticipation of what will continue into the future, a before, a present, and a future. So regardless of your particular political opinion, you're familiar with that kind of flow of argument in terms of how things work. And there's a similar dynamic going on in this section in Colossians, but in a way that is exquisitely wholesome and true, and in a way that is the only solid grounds by which change can come now and into the future. And so you'll notice this description between the past, the present, and the future, and we have a little outline above. But you see how he talks about their past experience. Paul, who's writing to this young church in modern present-day Turkey, he wants to excite them about their past and to enthuse them in terms of how they go on to continue in the faith. And so the first thing he does is he talks about their past. He says, look at where you have come from up to this point. And so he says in verse 21, once you were alienated or estranged from God and were enemies in your minds because of your evil behavior. So to appreciate where they are now and where they're going in the future, Paul starts by reminding them about where they were in the past. So these people had a conversion experience. They were not brought up as Christians. They were first generation Christians. They had an experience of the gospel that they had heard from Epaphras. We read about that in the opening section, verse 7. You learned it from Epaphras. And they turned from an old way of life to a new one. And Paul talks about that when he says, for example, in chapter 2 and verse 13, he says, when you were dead in your sins and in the uncircumcision of your sinful nature, God made you alive with Christ. We get a little more insight into what they were like before in chapter 3. Verse 5, he says, put to death, therefore, whatever belongs to your earthly nature, sexual immorality, impurity, lust, evil desires, and greed, which is idolatry. Because of these, the wrath of God is coming. And look what he says then. You used to walk in these ways in the life you once lived. So the gospel had shown them just how serious their estrangement from God was. The death of Jesus on the cross had showed them that. They had in fact rejected God. They had been living on their own terms. They didn't love God and give him his place. But when they learned this gospel about Jesus Christ from Epaphras, they understood that actually they were living as God's enemies, that they were hostile in mind and behavior, in a hostile mindset. They were not inclined to obey and love God. They were inclined rather to obey and love themselves. And they're very strong words that he uses. They make sense when compared against a holy and perfect God. In fact, that their behavior was evil. And that came from a hostile way of thinking. So he's reminding them, of course, of this as a means of encouraging them. Now, we don't know these men and women personally. We don't know what their lives were like day to day. But Paul himself actually hadn't met them personally either. But he knows that they did not walk in God's ways before. It might seem a little bit severe to say that these people were evil and hostile in the description he gives in verse 21, enemies. But when you think about it, that hostility towards God isn't actually so hard to find. If we were to ask people if they believed that Jesus had the right to tell them how to live, you would soon find expressions of hostility. Perhaps you don't yourself think that Jesus has any right to tell you how to live, and that idea makes you feel hostile and wanting to react against it. And even among those who think themselves spiritual, it's not too hard to find that kind of hostility. A couple of weeks ago, I was watching an evening TV program called The Cutting Edge on RTE, and it's hosted by a guy called Brendan O'Carroll, and they have a number of different people there, usually three, discussing whatever issues are relevant in the news at the moment. And towards the end of the conversation, one of the panel members named Deirdre O'Kane, she's an actor and a stand-up comedian. She wasn't short of an opinion or two, but she was saying, in terms of her understanding, she was a very spiritual person. And she said, I have taken a little bit from here, I have taken a little bit from there. Over the years, I have worked out a system that works for me. And I am very spiritual. I don't believe in any kind of organized thing. And I went to God and I said to him about this, and he said, "That's okay, Deirdre. You can carry on." Now, we have just learned in the previous section that Jesus created all things. He is our maker. And that he is the one who reconciles all things, him and no other, that he is God and he decides the terms of our spirituality. To make up your own is evil. To make yourself God, actually, it's not at all humble. It is hostile. It is not the language of God's friend. That is the language, nice as it might be presented, of God's enemy. We are not the source of a spiritual solution. We are the source of the problem. And when you listen to what Deirdre O'Kane said, who is being God in that description? Who is setting the terms there? It's Deirdre, not God. Now, that's not how it works. We are estranged and alienated from God, and that's the bad news. The good news is God does the work of reconciling us. He changes us from being hostile enemies to perfect friends. And so as he encourages this young church that's feeling pressure from their environment, the first thing Paul does is he wants to encourage them by saying, look at where you have come from. You used to be God's enemy. But secondly, he wants them to see that they have been reconciled. Remember, you've been God's enemy. Now remember, you're now reconciled. In verse 22, but now he has reconciled you by Christ's physical body through death to present you holy in his sight without blemish and free from accusation. He wants them to remember they've been reconciled. Now, he's been talking about this theme already with them. Just back up a few verses in verse 22, he says, but now Jesus, he's talking about this reconciliation now in verse 22, but he had mentioned it already in verse 20, where he said, for God was pleased to have all this fullness dwell in him, that's Jesus, and through him to reconcile to himself all things, whether things on earth or things in heaven, by making peace through his blood shed on the cross. And he had told them in the opening section in verse 13 that Jesus had rescued them from the dominion of darkness and brought them into the kingdom of the Son he loves, in whom we have redemption, the forgiveness of sins. So having reminded them of this past, he now wants to encourage them to appreciate their present. Now, I've been speaking to some of you this week about some of you who weren't Christians your whole lives. I had a meeting with my dear friend Davood back there, who won't mind me saying he comes from Iran. He wasn't brought up a Christian. And we were talking about what we were like before we came to faith. And just one of the things in Davood's story was that he said he was really only living for himself before he came to know who Jesus was. But he had a conversion experience. And others of you mentioned that you would describe yourselves as having been smug or self-centered, self-righteous. But now you have come to know the reconciliation there is in Jesus. Now you enjoy being free of what you were like in your past, of all the things that stood between you and God. That reconciliation is now your experience. Now for us, as a family, myself, Esther, and the kids, we're growing up in a Christian family, the kids are, and we pray that there will never be a day where the kids don't know that they have been reconciled to Jesus. And that is a wonderful truth that some of us are able to express. But that's not saying because we grew up in a Christian home, we're perfect and we didn't need to be reconciled to God. Quite the opposite. We're saying that we knew from day one that we needed to be reconciled to God. And that as far back as we can remember, we have celebrated that we have been reconciled in God because we know we needed that reconciliation. And that's a beautiful thing. And Paul wants to encourage his readers to continue in the faith by spelling out the wonder of who they now are in Jesus. He says they've been reconciled. Relationship has been made right again by Christ's physical body through death. You see the emphasis on his physical body there. Because Paul wants to make sure that they are clear that Jesus was a real man, that he had a real human body, and that that same body was put to death on the cross, and physically Jesus died. Real events in real flesh and blood, not ideas, but events. And the true gospel never says that the spiritual is more important than the physical, that these things go together. And because the physical man, Jesus, fully man, fully God, died in the way he did, he was in a unique position to reconcile us enemies and make us friends. He put things right. And so look at how Paul now describes these believers. He says that they are holy in his sight, without blemish, and free from accusation. So an act outside of themselves has made them holy. What Jesus has done, not something that they have done to make themselves like that, but an act outside of themselves, the cross of Jesus Christ, has made them holy. So Jesus acting on their behalf now presents them now as flawless, without blemish. And Jesus secured a not guilty verdict in God's court. And you cannot be better than and holy. You cannot improve on something that is already without blemish. You cannot be pronounced guilty when you're free from accusation. And because Jesus is all those things, holy, perfect, flawless, without guilt, the Colossians are now seen in him. They are seen the same way as Jesus in the here and now. They are reconciled and they are considered holy, blameless, without fault, free from accusation. That is the power of the gospel. Because Jesus is all those things, he alone can reconcile an imperfect people to a perfect God and enable them to be holy, blemish-free, without accusation, flawless. He made that peace through the cross. They have been and are reconciled. He said, look at your past. Now appreciate your present. He wants to excite them, to thrill them with that. And he knows there are influences around them that are pressuring them to look for something more, but there is no freedom anywhere else. They are free. They have heard the truth. They have grown in this same truth. This is the freedom of the gospel. And in Jesus, we imperfect people are presented perfect. It's always and only about the reconciliation Jesus has secured on our behalf. Now, we know, of course, very well in practice that we are far from perfect. That's why we have a confession every week collectively, to recognize and remind ourselves of that. And we meet our fallenness 1,000 times every day, don't we? We don't live perfectly. Yet we are perfectly reconciled. At the same time, we are sinful and perfectly right with God because of who we are in the present in Jesus. That is the wonder of the gospel. Great freedom. And so we can thank God that when we do fail miserably, because we do and will continue to, when we do fail miserably, we are still reconciled because of Jesus. And when we feel we've made great progress and we can see signs of maturity, we can thank God, because that only came because we are in Jesus. And our reconciliation is always one of, our experience rather, is always one of complete reconciliation. And that is expressed in a life of confession for our sin and of thanks when we go forward. We are reconciled in Jesus here and now. And one day we will not be only seen as perfect in Jesus despite our sin, we'll be seen as perfect in Jesus and rid of our sin. That's where we're headed. So whatever's brought you here today, you need to understand that no past is greater than what you can be in the present, because no past is beyond Jesus. Whatever it is you have experienced or are experiencing, no experience or past can prevent you from being holy, blameless, without fault before God because of what Jesus can do in the present. He makes you blameless in the present. And we can look forward to being rid of everything that still remains in our sinful nature into the future by leaning our lives into the gospel and going forward in the faith, by continuing in the faith. And that's where he wants them to go. And he says in verse 23, if you continue in your faith, established and firm, not moved from the hope held out in the gospel, this is the gospel that you heard and that has been proclaimed to every creature under heaven, and of which I, Paul, have become a servant. So he says, look at where you have been. Understand where you are in the present. Now, continue in the faith. That's the flow of his argument. Now, let me give you a little bit of a trivial example of this principle. My sister is living with us at the moment, Monday to Thursday. She's doing a course nearby. So she didn't have a computer for doing her studies. I said, look, you're going to need to get a computer. She finally got a computer, one of those ones that you can use the touch screen like an iPad and the keyboard. And so now she says, oh, yeah, it's great. I don't know how I ever managed without it. So she's looking at her past, and I don't know how we ever lived like that. Now I've got this computer. It's amazing. The present now is so wonderful. But she was messing around with the mouse, trying to get it to do something. And I went over and just stroked down on the mouse mat. And the screen, of course, moved. And she said, oh, I didn't know you could do that. And I was very happy that me in my 41 years could teach my 20-year-old, 19-year-old sister how her computer works. It was very satisfying. But she said, I never knew that could do that. And that's a very trivial example that she needs to continue to use it and to learn about it in order to maximize what it is she already has. It's a trivial example, but what Paul is saying to these believers is, look, you need to realize the mess you were in before. Now you need to realize everything you've got in the gospel. Now use the thing, continue, go forward. You don't get another one. You grow in your knowledge of it, and you grow in your knowledge of it in the using of it. It has a momentum to it. And so he says, if you continue in your faith, established and firm, not moved from the hope held out in the gospel. So the same gospel works throughout our lives of faith. They have been given a new life, so now they have the responsibility to live that new life. And he states it positively by being established and firm, much like a building. And he states it negatively then, not being moved from the hope held out in the gospel. And perhaps you're wondering, why does verse 23 begin with an if? Why the if? Why this condition? Perhaps for some of you, you're asking, or maybe your minds go to questions like, can a Christian lose their salvation then if he's got an if in there? That would take a week of sermon. So I want to give you a very, very simple answer. The simple answer is, can a Christian lose their salvation? No. How do you demonstrate you are a Christian? You continue in the faith. How do we demonstrate we are Christians who believe the gospel? We continue in the faith. But can a Christian lose their salvation? No. That's the simple answer. If there's still questions there, come and talk to me. But there are false teachers among these believers who are trying to move them away from the hope held out in the gospel. You see in verse 6 of chapter 2, he wants to encourage them the same way. He says, so then, just as you received Christ Jesus as Lord, continue to live in him. Rooted and built up in him, strengthened in the faith as you were taught, and overflowing with thankfulness. And look, he says, verse 8, see to it no one takes you captive through hollow and deceptive philosophy, which depends on human tradition and the basic principles of this world rather than on Christ. And he wants to make sure that nobody disqualifies them, he says later, from the hope that they have in the gospel. He says that in verse 18. Do not let anyone who delights in false humility and the worship of angels disqualify you for the prize. So Paul reminds them that they have the true gospel already. They're not missing anything. Far from it. The gospel that they have heard is universal, and he wants them to continue in it. You see how he says that to them in the second chunk of that, this of verse 23? This is the gospel that you heard, and that has been proclaimed to every creature under heaven, and of which I, Paul, have become a servant. What does he mean by the gospel being proclaimed to every creature under heaven? He's telling them that there's no creature on earth who needs anything more. Does that mean that, you know, beetles, crows, and koalas, and every other living creature has heard the gospel? I mean, that doesn't seem like something that he would want to tell them to encourage them to continue in the faith. Rather, he's emphasizing that there's nowhere else to find any truth except in this gospel. He has told them in verse 20 that Jesus has reconciled all things to himself, whether things on earth or things in heaven, by making peace through his blood shed on the cross. And he now underlines that truth and says this same gospel is universally true. He wants them to continue in the faith. And so he wants them to understand that the gospel they have heard is the one universal answer to the search for spiritual meaning and fulfillment. Now, we mentioned at the start how this type of dynamic can be seen in politics. And what we also know is that every political movement inevitably leads to disappointment. Let's see what they're saying about Donald Trump after the first 100 days of his term in office. Will he make America great again? Will all his supporters think as well of him 100 days later? Well, let's see. I can't tell the future, but I wager some people are going to be disappointed. Nothing ever quite delivers the hope that people are looking for. We keep looking for one agent of change after another, but somehow we still get stuck. But the gospel never disappoints. It works in a uniquely powerful and consistent fashion. The gospel never disappoints. It is the universal agent of change from start to finish in our lives and in this world. It is the universal agent of change. And Paul himself continues to be a servant to this gospel. That's how he describes himself. He is continuing in the faith. He has not moved on from there. And he urges them to do the same, and us to do the very same. Now, they were under real pressure to give in to the loud voices of their day, those campaigning for an alternative truth. And those pressures are here among us today. Are there not very loud voices campaigning for alternative truths all the time? We're increasingly being told that we can't say those types of things publicly that the Bible states. You can't believe those things. You're intolerant. You must adjust your beliefs to suit the culture of the day. You must accept the new norms, the philosophy of our progressive times. And it comes at a cost for us to continue in the faith. And there are pressures to not do that. But we must encourage one another to continue in the faith. And we do that in part by talking honestly about our struggles and the ways in which our doubts express themselves and the pressures we are confronted with and by in our culture. And when you feel you're in a minority, it's difficult to continue in the faith. And I have not seen such an acceleration of opposition to the faith as I have seen in the past 6-8 years. It's really been quite incredible. And so there are always the pressures of those who want to pull you away from saying and believing these very kinds of truths. But Paul says, hold your ground, stand firm, don't shift from these things. And of course, he wouldn't say that if there was pressure for them to shift. And our culture certainly is pushing us to shift from the Bible as a whole, and that pressure is growing. And so Paul paints this brilliant picture of who Jesus is and of what he has done. And he does that to anchor them in the storm. There is nowhere else to go. They have it all. They just need to continue in the faith, the same faith that they started out with. This is where hope is found, the proclaimed, spoken, all-powerful gospel of Jesus Christ. And the pressure to shift is there. It's growing. It's coming from those who smile and tell you they're Christian, but are adjusting everything the scriptures say. It comes from those who don't accept the Bible's authority on the questions that are not socially palatable. It's in your workplace, is it not? It's in your lecture theaters, surely. It's in your papers, it's on the radio, it's in your families. It's parading down the streets. But hear God's word to you today. Don't shift from the gospel that you've heard. Continue in the faith. Some of you may feel the pressure to shift through personal struggles with your health, with your experiences within your family, with illnesses, with depression, with grief, with disappointment. Those things can shift just as easily, can shift your thinking just as easily as social pressures. But lean into the gospel. Keep going. Continue in the faith. It's been interesting to observe that already the commentators are saying there will be a difference, and there already is a difference between campaigning Trump and President Trump. Already in his conversations with Obama, there's what they're describing as a softening. Very predictable. Very, very predictable. But the gospel campaign that Epaphras had brought these believers is the very same gospel that they continue in. Doesn't change. Once they had voted it in, so to speak, in their life, there is no separate message from that which was campaigned and that which they experience now and that which they will continue with into the future. No softening, no shifting, and no letting you down and not being consistent with the word that was given. So remember, if it is you are of faith, you were once God's enemy. Remember that you're now reconciled, and so continue in the faith. And if all of this is news to you today, you need to recognize that unless you accept and come under the authority of Jesus, you may think yourself spiritual, but that is a hostile approach to a holy God. But you can be reconciled perfectly. You don't need to catch up with us more experienced believers. You can be reconciled perfectly now in the person of Jesus. And if you come to faith today, God willing, if I meet you again in 50 years, you will be continuing in that same faith. Remember you are God's enemy. Remember you are now reconciled. And so continue in the faith. Let's pray.